Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. No Matt Moore today. I've got Royce Young from CBSSports.com. Hey, that's where I work. Royce, how's it going? Yeah.
Good backup plan, huh?
Yeah, it's a great backup plan. Actually, I'm gonna force you into making this a more regular thing, because surprisingly, people like you on the podcast.
Oh, that's a shame.
Speaking of podcasts, I want to congratulate the former Basketball Jones guys and the current starters for joining NBA TV. That's it's always cool when you feel like you're really making some headway in your career, and then at least for me, at every step of the way, I've been like, oh, I feel like I'm making some progress, and then the Basketball Jones always managed to just do something better and something cooler. So that's really awesome, though. I'm really happy for those guys.
Yeah, that's gonna be super cool. I'm looking forward to it. It's a shame. I will say it is a major shame that they had to drop the Basketball Jones name.
How could you not release that?
I know that hurts me not to be able to TBJ, but. It'll always just be TBJ.
Yeah.
I refuse to call it the starters.
Right. It's like, it's just like this example I'm going to give. It's like when Arco Arena in Sacramento changed its name to like Power Balance Pavilion and the Sleep Train Arena or whatever. And people just still call it Arco Arena because that's what
Nobody's
it is to you.
Calling it. Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah. It's exactly like that situation.
It's perfect.
And you know what? Take that, Canada. These guys are moving to Atlanta to be in the NBA TV TV sphere. And all I've heard about for the last year is, oh, Canada's taking over basketball. You got Andrew Wiggins, Anthony Bennett's number one pick, and Tristan Thompson this. No, we just stole your best basketball product. How about that?
That's exactly right. Man, talk about owning Canada.
Yeah. You know what's not owning Canada? This is a terrible segue. But The Russell Westbrook injury news yesterday was not happy news.
Yeah, that was it was unexpected for sure. It was the type of thing that at media day last Friday, Scott Brooks had said that Russell Westbrook had dealt with a little bit of swelling in his knee, but kind of everybody acted like it was all normal, all good.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people, I think right now, because the Thunder have a little bit of a reputation of being secret and quiet, that they just haven't been telling the truth about this Westbrook injury, that his meniscus is far worse off than everybody acted, and this is much more serious. But I don't really think that's the case. I think it's just really in basically what Sam Presti said it was kind of a bad luck thing, that there's a loose stitch in there from the original surgery, and it caused his knee to swell. He had to get a scope, and it's kind of, I think, as simple as that.
Yeah, I've never heard that one before, of there being a loose stitch causing the problem. And it makes me wonder, is there some kind of malpractice thing? Do they look into whether the surgery was properly done? I guess I just don't know where you go from there, if you have to go anywhere from there.
Well, they didn't use the same surgeon the second time, so I don't think that's coincidental. His first surgery was in Vail, Colorado, and his second one, the scope that he just had, was in California. So, I don't think it's coincidental that they used the second, the different surgeon. But, it's one of those things that it's hard to know if it was just if it was on the doctor's and on the surgeon's hands here that they didn't get it right, or if it was just truly just a freak thing and bad luck. But I've never heard of anything like that. A loose stitch causing swelling, and therefore Russell Westbrook has to miss, an extra 4 to 6 weeks because of it. And that's a pretty hefty thing. That's a lot of money the Thunder are paying to someone that they're not getting their services, So, I don't know if there is a lawsuit to be had there, and I don't know if they would pursue anything like that. But it definitely is a pretty upsetting situation, I think, from the perspective of the Thunder.
Definitely. And I mean, you have to assume he's really not going to be around for opening night, right? I mean, 4 weeks could – if he was back on the 4 weeks side of it, he could be right up against it. But there, even then, he's got to get into shape. He's got to he's got to be ready to play. So, I mean, likely they're starting the season with Reggie Jackson as the point guard, right?
Oh, yeah, they are. The thing is that 4 to 6 weeks actually is supposed to mean 4 to 6 weeks of the regular season, I think. So,
oh!
Yeah, so it's even more substantial. That was the Thunder, the way it was announced, they just said Russell Westbrook got 4 to 6 weeks. And then, like, in the inside, like, the press release at the very bottom, it's like 4 to 6 weeks of the regular season. So, like, they kind of tried to, I think, sneak that one by a little bit. But so, yeah, he's definitely out for the beginning of the season. And he's, you know, he's out potentially until close to Christmas. So the Thunder are hurting in a big way. Because I think you said it right there, Zach, that it's not just that they don't have Russell Westbrook, but now he doesn't get the training camp that he was going to have.
Yes.
To get back into shape. He doesn't have the preseason games to get back out on the floor. He hasn't played a game since April 24th when he hurt his knee. So even when he does come back, you know, it's going to take him a while to round back into form a little bit. And the Thunder may not have Russell Westbrook as we know him, you know, until late January or February.
Yeah, that it is kind of crazy. I mean, we just always assume, like, all right, the guy's out 4 to 6 weeks. He'll come back. He'll be fine. And sometimes that's the case. But, you know, a knee injury like that, and having to clean up the knee in a guy that relies so much on explosiveness, like, right, even in his skilled part of the game of the pull-up jumpers that have become so deadly, that's a lot of force to put on that knee to stop on a dime and kind of raise up like that. And God, if you don't see him being Westbrook until January, that, you know, is that, I mean, Thunder aren't going to miss the playoffs. They still have quite a good player, and clearly I'm talking about Kendrick Perkins to right, lead them. But by the way, I saw a very disturbing Photoshop. Whoever made the Twerkin' Perkins Photoshop then sent it on my timeline. Good God, that was really unsettling. But, you know, they're not going to miss the playoffs. You know, could home court advantage be at risk with, you know, you got the Spurs still, you got the Rockets who are looking to be contenders, the Warriors, the Clippers. I mean, do you think that could actually be something that's no longer a foregone conclusion?
Yeah, and I think it might have been even before this happened. You know, the Thunder, they're still very good, and I think that they were still should be considered one of the favorites in the West. But you know, we all know what happened with them. They didn't re-sign Kevin Martin, and they're going to be relying on young players in their second unit, Reggie Jackson and Jeremy Lamb. And so I think the Thunder had question marks about how well that they would do this season even before this news broke. But now that this news is broke, you know, that there's a very good chance that Thunder, I think, could, you know, get off to in their first 20 games, you know, go 11-9 or something. And you know, while it's still just November and December, and, you know, obviously you don't, those games don't matter as much when you're talking about, you know, the postseason and trying to play your best when you're going into the playoffs, but those losses matter and those losses count. So, yeah, you know, if the Thunder fall behind the eight ball a little bit here, they may not be able to dig themselves out. And because, again, like we just said, you know, Russell Westbrook may not be the dominant player that we knew. You know, he may not be that at all, for all I know. I don't know, but certainly it's going to take him a little bit of time to work back into shape. So, you know, the Thunder, they could be looking at, you know, instead of being a number one or number two seed in the West, they could be looking at number five or six this season.
And there's just such a huge difference between looking at a 1-8 matchup against, I don't know, we could say the Timberwolves or the Mavericks or the Blazers or somebody,
right,
or you're starting out on the road in a 4-5 matchup against the Warriors or,
right, or
the Rockets or,
yeah,
the Grizzlies. I mean, that's a pretty big swing there, just in terms of setting up your road for the playoffs.
Yeah, you're looking at going from you know, from almost guaranteed to get through the first round, and then, you know, thinking about your second round matchup, to now having to scratch and claw to get through that opening round, and that, which is no guarantee. So it's a very big difference, I think, to go from the number one or number two seed in the West to number four or five, because we all know it, the West is incredibly deep, and even the teams I think that are going to be 7, 8, and 9 are going to be pretty good this year. So, you know, to be a 4, 5, or 6 seed in the West, I think you got to be a pretty good team. So it would be a big deal, I think, to drop down that far.
And I mean, not trying to paint this as end of the world, they're still going to be very good. But they don't have that much guard depth anymore. I mean, you got Reggie, you've got Thabo, you've got Lamb, who really does have to step up now and be the player people thought he was going to be out of Connecticut, and you've got Derek Fisher. You got Derek Fisher, but that's it. You've got four guards. I mean, yeah, maybe they retain somebody from training camp if they've got someone in there they like, or I don't know, they can go out and sign somebody, but there's not a lot of depth there.
Yeah, and that's, you know, they brought in Deontay Garrett, which, you know, nobody knows who that is, but he's played in D League, and you know he's on the training camp roster. But you know, there are other players out there. I think Daniel Gibson's available.
Yeah,
I'm blanking on, like, there's like eight decent free agent point guards that are still available, and you know, they could try to go. And I think that they probably will have to. Because, you know, what if Reggie Jackson rolls an ankle? Now what do you do? Now you got Derek Fisher as your starting point guard, for crying out loud. So
maybe we see a lot of point Durant this year.
Yes, and that's probably a better option. Certainly better option than Derek Fisher starting at point guard. So I'd rather I was about to say make a Kendrick Perkins joke, and I regret it immediately. So no, I will not say that. But
I feel like with, like, predictions, people want to get cute sometimes and pick the team that no one else is picking. But I was going to be very vanilla and just go Heat Thunder this year for my finals prediction. And now I kind of got to get cute, I guess. Or maybe picking the Thunder at this point would be getting cute. I don't know.
So you're going to go with, like, Bucks, Warriors or something?
Oh,
like
no,
that?
I'm going to go full Homer. I'm going Bucks, Wolves. Wolves sweeping four. How about that?
Yeah, right now you're just talking yourselves into it. It's like, you're like, okay, well, if you look at the Wolves, you know, they got everybody back this year. And, you know, if they can keep away from injuries, you know, I think that they got a great starting five.
Yeah.
We all do that. We all talk ourselves into it. And if they can get the right matchup in the postseason.
I went to the training camp yesterday in Mankato, which is like an hour and a half away. And I'll be going there today, tomorrow, and Friday. And so I got so much talk about how good Corey Brewer has been that I started thinking, like, you know what? They might be fine defensively, and now I've got to be like, and now I've got to maybe check myself a little bit.
Yeah, you're talking yourself into Corey Brewer. That's when you know
that guy is fun to talk to, though. That guy is incapable of talking without smiling.
Yeah, that is amazing. I had a friend of mine when last year, I think it was I don't remember which game it was, the second one. I think the Thunder had played the Nuggets, and he pointed out to me, it was like, isn't it amazing how Corey Brewer is always smiling?
Always.
And I never really realized it. And I obviously I couldn't stop watching that. That's all I could watch about him was like, yeah, he seriously is smiling nonstop on the court. And it's not like a looking pleasant type thing. Like it's like a big
human. It's like this genuine like happiness.
Yeah, he's just like a 6-year-old kid just like running in the wind. He's just so happy to be out there.
I feel like with this Westbrook injury news, I kind of want to change the top of our Elite 100 rankings, which, hey, we should talk about those right now.
Oh.
Look at that segue.
Was it relevant?
Matt and I went over players 100 through 51 last podcast, and yesterday we had 50 through 26 posted. You're posting 25 through 11 today?
Yes.
At some point?
Those will come soonish.
Yeah, soonish. I'm glad that I got to interrupt your workflow to have you on the podcast.
CBS Synergy.
I'm getting in trouble on Twitter because Rudy Gay is apparently too low, thanks to you and Matt, because I had him ranked pretty high. And because Serge Ibaka is ahead of Al Jefferson and DeMarcus Cousins and all kinds of players. And I want to talk about Serge Ibaka with you first. As I was like trying to think of something to write about him for our little player capsules, you know, it was Serge Ibaka is an overrated defender. He's not one of the best defenders in the league. Right. He doesn't deserve Defensive Player of the Year consideration. And I agree with that to a certain extent, but at the same time, all right, if he's one of the 15 best defensive players in the league, like maybe he's not one of the three best, but if he's one of the 15 best, that's significant, right? And whether he bites on pump fakes or not, it's not like guys are just going in the lane saying, hey, I know I can pump fake him, he's going to get in the air. Like, he deters people from going into the lane.
Yeah, you know, I don't think, and, you know, I agree with you about Serge Ibaka and everybody else, that he is overrated in terms of being, you know, one of the three best defenders probably in the league, because block shots are not the end-all be-all. They're, you know, I think that people underrate block shots. I think people greatly overrate block shots.
Yes.
But, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. You prevented potentially 2 points from going in. It depends on whether or not you get if you regather the ball after the block. You know, so there's a lot of factors there. But, you know, things like sound pick and roll defense, you know, helping from the weak side, those are the things that are more important. And I think Serge Ibaka, one of the things that he's very good at is that, you know, I think he does I don't like the word intimidate because I don't think anybody's actually scared literally from going in there. But I think that he kind of encourages teams to not maybe attack the rim in the way that they normally would because he's there and, you know, he's waiting on them. So in terms of defensive value, yeah, he's probably not the number one or two best defender in the league. But like you said, we're talking about a guy that's probably top 10 or top 15 defensively, and that's worth something in this league. And then you combine the fact that he averages, you know, 13 a game, 8 rebounds a game, shoots almost 60% from the field. He can knock down threes, and he's getting a lot better. I mean, this is a guy that hasn't played competitive basketball for all that long. So, I, the funny thing is with these lists, and, you know, we make them. We're just three basketball fans that make them, and there's no way that you can land on anything that's going to, like, represent it perfectly.
Right.
And I think that Serge Ibaka at 41, I think that that's pretty fair. I think that that's a good place to have him. What was he last year? Oh, he's 43 last year. So, you know, it's somewhere in there. I think you could make a case for him being in the 30s, but I think that there's a case to be made for him even a little bit lower. So,
yeah,
that seems about right.
What I just noticed is that the person, or there have been a couple of people, but the one person that stuck out this morning was saying, how can you guys have Serge Ibaka ahead of Cousins, ahead of David West, ahead of Al Jefferson, ahead of David Lee? And this is the second straight year, at least according to previous year's rankings, that Serge Ibaka has been ahead of him. So maybe it's just like that's kind of how it is.
Yeah, you know, but it's funny. Like, why is he ahead of DeMarcus Cousins? I don't know. I mean, but the thing is that you have to try to look at each player, you know, outside of the box of their situation, because, you know, DeMarcus Cousins and his role in Sacramento is far different than Serge Ibaka and his role in Oklahoma City.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think the Thunder ran – you know, they probably ran 10 total plays last season for Serge Ibaka. And, you know, that team was – the focus was completely about Westbrook and Durant, and Serge Ibaka was really the fourth and sometimes fifth option offensively. So everything that he got was just kind of a product of, you know, offensive rebounding or a late clock pick and pop or something like that. Well, those other players, they're more of a feature within the offense. So, you know, I do think people just look at his stats, look at this. You know, I think as a player – I think Serge Ibaka is kind of a poor man's LaMarcus Aldridge that maybe plays a little bit more, you know, a little bit better defense. So, you know, as a player, you're talking about a 6'11 guy that can knock down threes and block shots and rebound pretty well. So, yeah, I think it's – I don't think that you can make a case really for those guys to be ahead of him. But if you wanted to make one, I wouldn't really have a big
The polarizing one is Rudy Gay.
Yeah.
I actually had him as a top 30 player, and then either you or Matt had him as a top 50 and a top 75 player. So
I had him in the 60s somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So we were way different on him, and for me it's, you know, we had this huge discussion across the basketball blogosphere, Twitterverse last year about, is Rudy Gay actually good? And I think, like, you look at him and you look at the situation he was in with Memphis, and he is not a good player in that Memphis system.
Right.
When he went to Toronto, he improved quite a bit, but he still has these weird limitations that prevent him from being, you know, kind of this great player a lot of people thought he was going to be coming out of Connecticut. And now it's, you know, I feel like he's still, like, one of the better players in the league. I mean, top 50 is not bad by any means. I feel like he's in that, like, top 30 range just because if he keeps making the improvements we saw just from Memphis to Toronto, I don't know. That's a really impactful player in terms of bringing the focus of the defense to you.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
You know, boy, Rudy Gay, he was a really tough one.
He can't shoot jumpers, which is a problem.
Yeah, and I think part of my problem with Rudy Gay is that he should be better.
Oh, definitely.
Every time I watch him play, even when he was in Memphis, that I'd watch him and, you know, he'd score 14 points on 6 of 8 shooting in the first half. And you'd look at him and you'd say, why isn't he doing this all the time? You know, and it's just, why doesn't he have the ability? He's 6'9". He's incredibly long. He's incredibly athletic. He can move. He's not a very good jump shooter, and he falls in love with that stuff, but this is a guy that seems to have all the tools to be, you know, a 20-point-a-game scorer with good efficiency numbers. I don't see why he's not. And maybe it's his own personal offensive demons that he can't let go of those, you know, 22-footers. But I think that's my biggest problem with him. You know, it's funny, last season we had him at number 30, and so he dropped 20 spots. And his season, I think, last year, because you mentioned it, he did not play very well in Memphis before he got traded. But, you know, numbers-wise, they're not, it's not drastically different
right.
than what it was. And we still dropped him 20 spots. So I think a lot of it, what Rudy Gay is battling, is the perception, you know. And he's kind of become the poster child for advanced stats guys to kind of shake their fists in the air and say that, see, this guy's not as good as his raw numbers indicate he is. But as a basketball player, he's still pretty good. He can still be a leading scorer on a team. I think it's just – I feel like 50 is pretty fair for him, quite honestly. I think that's a pretty fair spot to have him.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily bad. And I think people look at, like, oh, you guys have him 50. That's disrespectful. It's like, I don't know, being 50th out of 450 potential players, like, that's pretty right. good.
Yeah, it's not a bad place to be. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, every player on here, they personally probably think that they're, you know, top 15, top 10 player. And the fans of those players probably feel the same way. And, you know, Rudy Gay, I think, should be. I think he should be a top 20 player. But I think that's more on him and less on us.
Yeah. And it's also possible that he's as good as he was going into last year. Maybe he is still capable of being that 30th ranked player. But what if other guys just passed him? What if it's not a decline in him, but other guys just got good? Now, 20 guys, I don't know. Maybe that's extreme, but that's kind of an aspect of rankings like we don't always really consider, is like, what if other guys just got better and
yeah.
he got a little bit better, but not to the same degree that they did.
Well, yeah, the higher you go up this list, the better the players get. And you start seeing, you know, I was doing 25 through 11 this morning, and, you know, looking at some of the players that, like, wow, we have that guy 18th. But it's like, then you look ahead of him, you say, well, who's going to drop? So, you know, just looking at this, you know, you got Mike Conley, 47th. Mike Conley is really, really, really good.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that there's any big shame in being 50th, and because it means that there are 49 really good players ahead of you. And, you know, I think the NBA is as talented as it's been in a long time, with the depth of really good players. And so I think that that's a good point, is that it's not necessarily that you're just falling behind. It's just that maybe some guys are kind of passing you by because they're that good.
We had a run of Brooklyn Nets in the 30s. We had Paul Pierce at 38. We had Joe Johnson at 37. Brooke Lopez at 32 and Kevin Garnett at 31. The KG one is maybe the most interesting because he was 16th last year. And I think that without Rondo, he had to do a lot more. And he's just gotten to this point. He's 37 years old. And especially in the playoffs, like, you look at him, he's fighting out there. He's battling. But there are just some real limitations. And it's breaking 16-year-old Zach Harper's heart to actually – I mean, I was the lowest on Kevin Garnett out of the three of us. And it was painful. It was painful not to think of him as one of the 20 best players in the league, even at this
yeah.
point.
I feel like guys like Garnett and like Paul Pierce are the hardest to rank, because I know that they can still play and I know that they're still good, but – you know, while you're doing the ranking, it's like, am I ranking what they are right now, or is it kind of a projection of what they'll be this season?
Right.
Because at a certain point, Paul Pierce is 35, Garnett's what, 37. They've got, and I think we saw it some last year with Garnett, that the decline is coming. It just is, and at some point they aren't going to be that elite player that we know them, that we have known them as. So, I think guys like that are really, really hard to rank, because, you know, I know that Kevin Garnett is still really good, but, you know, I think he's getting to the stage now where he's got to be good in a role, and it's not necessarily going to be good as the featured guy on a team. And, you know, age is a terrible thing, because it brings it down, and that you want him to be the 29-year-old Kevin Garnett that's, you know, putting up a double-double every single night with six blocks, but it just doesn't happen anymore. And so, you know, next season is probably going to be even worse. It'll probably be, he'll be in the, you know, 50s probably.
My first article for when I become a writer for Cosmopolitan magazine is going to be titled Age is the Worst.
Age is the Worst. I hate it. As somebody that just had a birthday, it's funny because you used to just, birthdays were so fun, and it's like another year. I can't wait till I get older, because it's, you know, once I turn 16, I get a car, or I turn 18 or turn 21. And at a certain point, it's just like, man, I wish birthdays went the opposite way. I wish I could get younger.
Yeah, well, that would be nice. There are milestones you hit where it's nice. Like 18, you can vote and you're an adult and all that crap. 21, you can legally drink. 25, I didn't even realize it was such a good birthday, but my car insurance got cut in half.
Yes, that was amazing.
Yeah, that was a nice surprise because I didn't even know that happened.
But see, that also is like the hidden crap of 25 because you care about car insurance for the first time.
Exactly. And they get you because then you got to start paying for your own health insurance. But
yes.
But yeah, I'm turning 32 in January, and I was just like, good God, what happened to me?
I know, and that's the thing, is I still feel like I'm like 23, like in my head. That's what I think I am.
I feel like my age, but I just keep thinking like, oh, it'd be cool if my license said 25. Like if I was doing what I was doing at the age of 25, yeah. That would be cool.
So in the Elite 100 sports writer ranking, you're just dipping, man.
Oh, I'm dipping big time.
Well, you get the worse it gets.
I am excited about 35, because then I can run for president.
Yes. Now that's something to look forward to.
maybe a fascinating juxtaposition in these rankings. 40 is Kawhi Leonard and 39 is Josh Smith. Now, if you told most NBA fans a year ago that these guys were going to be ranked right next to each other in a rankings project, I think people would have flipped out.
Yeah.
Because Josh Smith has always been this holy grail of basketball talent and defensive awesomeness and highlights. And I soured on him a couple years ago, and luckily his play has made that not look so foolish as it did a couple years ago. But I mean, it sounds crazy to people. I would take Kawhi Leonard right now, even if the contracts were the exact same. I'd take Kawhi over Josh Smith because Kawhi just doesn't hurt you. Like, he may not help you as much in the peaks, but the valleys are not as bad.
There's, you know, I think that there's something, I don't know if I can say this the way that it is in my brain right now, but there's something to be said for a player that doesn't think that he's that great, if that makes sense.
Yes.
That there's something to be said for a player that, you know, Josh Smith thinks that he's great. And that's awesome. You know, if you think, you know, he understands the talent that he has, but I think that sometimes that can work against you because you think that you're capable or you think you should be doing things that probably you shouldn't be. And a guy like Kawhi Leonard, he understands exactly what he is. And he understands exactly who he's playing for and exactly what he's doing. And I think if you poll most GMs in the league, they probably agree with you that, you know, give me Kawhi Leonard because I want a guy that understands what he needs to do to be effective. And I think we all saw it in the postseason, too, that I think yes. Kawhi Leonard has quite a solid ceiling. I think he can get a lot better than even what we saw him as. So as a scorer and as a ball handler, as a shot creator, I think that he can be pretty, you know, good. And you know, I think that we've seen what Josh Smith is capable of. I don't think there's anything out there left for him to fulfill. I think that we know exactly what he is as a player. So, you know, I honestly, at this point, I take, you know, Josh Smith being above Kawhi Leonard is fine because Josh Smith's accomplished a little bit more. But,
right.
But yeah, if I'm picking, if I have a draft right now, I'm probably taking Kawhi Leonard too.
And it's I wrote this question of, all right, he jumped from 72 to 40 after his second year. You know, can he be a top 20 player? And it seems like, all right, Kawhi Leonard does not seem to be a good enough player to be considered a top 20 player in the NBA. But if you think about it, like, he's so capable of being an elite role player. He does everything well. And I mean, the more I think about it, it doesn't seem that crazy. Like, if 2 years from now we're still doing this and he's a top 20 player, I don't know that I'd be like, oh, this is ridiculous that we've gotten too high on him. Now, I don't know. I mean, like, I would never build a team around him and I would never have him as even the second option on the team. But I think that the way he excels in his role, he can kind of have a similar impact to maybe Andre Iguodala, who wasn't top 20 for us, but he's been 27th 2 years in a row. And that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, I can't really put my finger on a good comparison for Kawhi Leonard's ceiling. Like, if Kawhi Leonard were to fulfill all of his promises and be as good as he could possibly be, like, is Scottie Pippen too high? Could he ever be like a defensive wing stopper and a really good second scorer, or is that too much?
Yeah, I don't know that I've seen. I mean, I haven't seen the scoring. Like, yeah, he can score, but I haven't seen like that kind of creation.
Like that he could score 30 any given night.
Yeah, like I don't see that happening. And then I guess relative to today's perimeter defending standards with the rules of no hand checking and no contact and all that, maybe a Pippen type defender relative to what today's perimeter defenders are able to do isn't out of the question. He's so good at everything he does. Like maybe just a souped up Shane Battier.
Yeah, maybe that's a souped up Shane Battier.
Yeah, like if you took Shane Battier to West Coast Customs,
right?
And exhibit pimped out your Shane Battier, that would be Kawhi Leonard in a couple of years.
I see you like your 3-point shot, so I gave an extra 3-point shot.
What about Andre Iguodala? It was weird that he was the exact same spot as last year to me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, I don't know, I feel so differently about him. But 27th is a more than fair ranking for him. But it just feels like, at least for me, I have a different opinion on him after last year and what he was able to do for the Denver defense and everything, as opposed to what I felt about him in Philadelphia.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I kind of, you know, going back to Josh Smith, I kind of had the same feeling. I've always kind of had the same feeling with Iguodala and Josh Smith. I kind of saw some parallels between them that, you know, they had the potential to be just the most elite role players you could possibly have on your team if they would just kind of get it straight in their heads. And plus, if they could get a roster around them where they could fit into that. And, you know, Iguodala in basically every way his you know, raw statistics dropped. But I think he was a better player last year. I think the way that he fit with the Nuggets was exactly the kind of player that he needs to be. You know, I think we saw it in both 2010 and 2012 for Team USA. That was the kind of role that Andre Iguodala needed to be. Just a guy that finishes on the fast break, that he plays high-level defense, that he passes, and that scoring is not his focus. And that's what he was for Denver last year, and he was a wrecking ball on both ends of the floor. And, you know, I thought that was maybe one of his better seasons, even though that, you know, if you just look at the stats in his, if you look at his career log, it looks like he had a down year. But for what he brought to the Nuggets and how effective he was, I thought it was a great season for him.
Yeah, there are two quick questions I have for you that I find interesting. Is it going to look foolish that we put John Wall ahead of Ty Lawson?
Oh man, that's a good question.
Lawson's 36. We've got John Wall at 33. It's not a huge difference, but you know, Wall had a much bigger jump from 52 to 33 than Lawson's 41 to 36. And I mean, I think most people would agree that Lawson is the better player as of right now. But this may be what you're talking about of what we project John Wall as this year.
Yeah, that's got to be what it is. Is that, you know, what is John Wall? He's 23 now. So I think that a lot of the reason that we probably moved him up is that we feel like that the potential that he has as maybe a star player, as a star point guard. I don't think we feel that way about Ty Lawson for some reason. I don't know. And I don't really know why. I don't know really why.
He's really good.
No, but nobody feels like for some reason that he's like star level. It's just like, you know, he's like in that kind of lower tier of, or not lower, but like, you know, second tier of point guard where, you know, he's not a Westbrook or Chris Paul or Derrick Rose, but he's still really, really good. And yeah, I think that we might feel a little bit dumb about that.
Yeah, it just hit me. I was like, oh, that maybe isn't going to look so smart.
Yeah, I am a little curious to see. You know, Ty Lawson is going to have to take more responsibility this season for the Nuggets because of what they've lost. Yeah. So, you know, this will be a big year for him, I think, to maybe kind of validate that if he can keep it up and he can make his teammates, you know, better around him. Because I think that he really did flourish in George Karl's up-tempo system. I think that fit him really well. I think it led to a lot of easy buckets for him. So, you know, if he can keep it up this season, then I think he'll prove something. And I could see him moving into the top 25 next year.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me at all. And then the other one along those same lines, is it going to be really dumb that we have Pau Gasol ahead of Brook Lopez?
Oh, man.
I mean, this is all in this case, it's all about injuries, right?
Yeah, isn't it funny though? You know, I feel like 15 years ago, Brook Lopez would be considered a top 10 player in the league if he was the exact same player.
Oh yeah,
it's just the stereotype of being 7 foot tall and scoring 20 points a game. That, you know, that obviously that's like one of the best players you can have. You're a center that scores 20 a game. You've got to be amazing. But I think that, you know, Brook Lopez, you know, he's not a great defender. He's definitely not a very good rebounder for his position and for his size. So, but, you know, Pau Gasol, going back to the Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce thing, that, you know, he's going to be coming down pretty soon. He's 33. So I think probably by the end of the season, you know, but Gasol, he was 17th last year? So
yeah,
he's dipped quite a bit. And Lopez is trending up. He was 58th. Now he's 32nd. So, you know, it probably is. This probably is the year that they kind of meet in the middle, and then Lopez will pass him next year, I would imagine.
Yeah, I wrote that Gasol is as talented as any big man in the league, but we don't know if his body can hold up. And, right, you know, that's been the problem the last couple of years is, you know, he's still skilled. He's still capable of scoring in the post, in the mid post, high post, all that stuff. But, God, can you keep him on the court? And then how much of a pounding is he going to have to take because he's playing next to Chris Kaman instead of, right, Dwight?
Yeah, exactly. And plus, you know, for whatever amount of time that Kobe's not there, then everybody's going to basically circle Pau Gasol, and if you stop him, you beat the Lakers. It's pretty simple, because he's going to be as much of the offensive focal point as he could be, from passing out of the high post to trying to set up teammates to, you know, big to big stuff with Chris Kaman. It's going to all be about Gasol this, for at least the first month probably. So, you know, how well is he going to hold up through that? I think that's something to ask.
Yeah, well, Royce, thanks for joining me. I'm gonna let you go so you can finish up these 25 through 11 rankings.
Now I gotta go do work. Huh?
Yeah, now you gotta go do work. I'm probably gonna take a nap or something. So
yeah,
I might be around to help you out if need be.
You earned it. I grant this nap.
And keep those sutures tight, my friend.
Yeah, no loose stitches here.
All right, thanks, Royce.